Blog Talk Radio. The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
We go back to space, man. We just can't show up.
Hey, hey, we back live. Let's talk football with Hangman Brooks. We in the building, and we here. Just wanted, you know, everybody to, you know, thank you for bearing with us through this time right now. We have a couple of call-ins right now. You are now live with Hangman Brooks.
Hello? Hello, this is Dave Brooks. What's up? What's up, man? Ain't nothing much, man. I just wanted to, I'm sitting here listening to the show, man. I don't have too much to say. Just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. I've been calling and I didn't hear anything for quite some time.
We had a little difficulty, man. We had a little difficulty because we had a new spot. We had a restaurant.
Yeah, we had some comments today.
Yeah, so we had a little difficulty. We tried to get in touch with Glenn. He should be on, and we got Craig Jeffries. We got J.D. Brown, but we had some difficulty.
Oh, yeah.
We had a new spot.
Yeah, I know. I grew up with J.D. Brown.
Oh, J.D. used to coach Fort Davis Jets.
Yeah, but he was at Keller Miller before then, you know what I'm saying? As a kid, when I was about 7, 8 years old, man. I've been knowing J.D. since I've been about 7, 8, 9 years old.
Thanks for calling, Dave.
You know, matter of fact, I knew just about all the football players because I was on
Dave, thanks for calling.
Huh?
We got to try to get Glenn. We got some guests coming on.
Oh, yeah. We got Glenn.
Okay.
Okay. So what you want me to just hang
right,
on?
Now, I'll get right back to you. Appreciate it. Take care.
We got a guest coming on. So talk to you.
Yes, yes. So we just had a little bit of a day on with us. Got Glenn coming on in just a second. So just bear with us.
Glenn not answering the phone. Keep going to voicemail.
I guess so, man. He's up in 8:40.
8:40 or 7:40?
7:40.
I've been calling since 7:45.
Yeah. my daughter. My mother, brother, grandmother, Amy in that order. Public visitation. We met at border. Told her she'd take me back. I'll be more than border. I'm in the case. I'm on my head. Corn cutting dry. I'm sick that bread. She need a dad. Baby, please. They let it go up in the head of universal.
Yeah, it's your boy Big Box, Everything DMV Radio. One and only Hangman Brooks, man. You know what, man? This football thing is really, 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 really diesel. You know what I mean? When I say that, I mean that by players that they go out there and the things that they do is just, you know, sometimes remarkable. And with their athleticism and their, you know, ability to, you know, run up and down that field so many times. I want to know what you think about, you know, Odell Beckham.
He's a real good receiver. Before I start putting greatness on people, that's the media and everybody, it's just my opinion. He's a real good receiver. I believe he can be all-time great. But the thing about it is, to be all-time great, you must be able to run every route on the tree. And he's beginning to do that. He can go deep. He's beginning to run slants. He's beginning to run the outs, the post corners. He is beginning to catch the ball all over the field. Dez Bryant first started, all he could go was deep. But they now are changing, you know, changing the way they do things. They want to be great. So Odell Beckham is really learning how to run all the routes. When he run all the routes and keep progressing, he's going to be a great. But I don't give people greatness after 2 years. People can get hurt. Things happen, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they got inside his head the other day,
uh-huh.
You know, and he went for the old okey-doke.
Uh-huh.
He dropped a pass because of the guy got in his head, you know. So he is a real, real good receiver. To be great, you got to take another step. But he's on his way, though.
Right. Now, what do you think about that penalty and that fine and that that suspension?
Well, first of all, you know, when I played football, I went out of my way to try to hurt receivers. But him, he's running around with a defensive back. They falling on the ground, tussling, grabbing each other.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's really, you're not doing any harm to anybody. Just like two kids in a sandbox, okay?
Right.
Then and then the penalty he got, he ran full speed and ran his helmet into the other guy's helmet. Let me tell you something.
Wow.
That is the dumbest. He should get suspended and fined $1 million for being dumb. And the reason why
uh-huh.
is because your brain is inside your head. Your head is inside a helmet. You take your helmet and run into somebody else's helmet to hurt the other person. Now, he's going full speed. He could have knocked his own self out. Now, if you want to really hurt somebody, go full speed and bring that forearm to the head. Bring that forearm to the head or the neck.
Oh, my.
If you're going to get 15 and get suspended, you might as well bring that thing. And back in the day, we called that thing that forearm.
Oh,
you bring
my.
That forearm and you bring it deep. I mean, with a lot of conviction,
huh.
if you bring that thing strong,
lean
you
on.
Can do a lot of damage.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can knock some screws loose on his helmet. You know, you can, you can mess his neck up. But you take your head,
uh-huh.
your brain is inside your head, and your head is in a helmet, and you hit other people in the head with their helmet. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Football players now, they're horrible. They butt people like two Rams. You run in your head into somebody else, and then you want to know why I got a concussion. You got shoulder pads. You got forearms. It's a whole lot of ways to go after somebody, but take your head, and then a lot of them tackle with their head down, right?
Uh-huh.
You tackle with your head down, and you get a neck injury. So he should be fine, not so much going after him, but using his head.
Oh, man.
So,
that's
never, And the kids now, never take your helmet and run in somebody's head. That is ridiculous.
That just don't make sense.
Yeah, but they do it, and it's a fashion now. Everybody want to hit somebody with their helmet.
Right.
And their body needs to sue their brain for non-support. I mean,
I know that's right.
You know, it's just crazy. I ain't never hit nobody with my helmet.
Yeah,
my helmet's for protection for what?
Right. Right, for your head.
Yeah, I got a brain. I need my brain.
Oh, man. Hey, tell me this. What you think about that new concussion movie that's coming out about the game of football?
I haven't seen it. I heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
I don't think it's out yet. I haven't seen it either.
Anything like Hollywood builds everything up.
Uh-huh.
They go overboard with it. You know, most of the things that are in movies, you know, 75% of them are not true. They got to hype it up because it's a movie. You got to make money.
Right.
But
right.
I haven't seen it. But I never had a concussion. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
All them years in the game, no concussions?
I don't use my head. I don't use my head. Now, I've gave people concussions and hit people because I clothesline people.
Oh, man.
I clothesline people and elbow to the head.
Oh, man.
That's the way I play. And back then, that was the rules. You could hit people in the head.
Kill the head, the body, or die.
Yeah, kill the head, the body, or die. I'm trying to take your head off so you'll spend more time with your wife.
Oh, man.
If I knock your head off, that means you won't be cheating on your wife. You stay home and play with the kids.
Yeah,
you might not know who you are, but at least you'll be home.
You'll be safe, huh?
Yeah.
I know that's right, man. Yeah, I don't see too many people playing a game like that no more, man.
They don't. Because all they want to do is hit people upside the head. That's all they want to do.
Yeah, and we got the wonderful Mr. Coach Jeffers coming on tonight.
Greg Jeffers, one of the best. Coach Dunbar, a lot of championships.
Uh-huh.
He's out the hill now. Plenty of respect for him. He's produced a lot of pros. He's absolutely great. We had difficulty with the show earlier. So we had a new spot. We had a restaurant. And we had some difficulties. We were going to have Glenn Harris on the show.
Yeah,
but we're going to go, and we're going to move right to
it. Hello? Hello? Yes. Hello?
Hey, Mr. Jeffers. How you doing, Coach?
Good, man.
Mr. Hangman, how you know Mr. Brooks?
Huh?
How you know Mr. Brooks right here, Hangman? How you know the Hangman?
Man, we go back, man. Coaching junior high school football, baseball, softball, and just following his career, man, when he's at Cadoza. Now he's at Dunbar. All the good athletes know the good athletes, man.
Absolutely. You know, I have so much respect for you. You know, you won a lot of championships with Dunbar. And then you went to New Mexico, you came back, and you went to Oxford Hill, you turned that program around. Just tell us your journey. You know, I know you played Dunbar, I know your brother played there. Just talk about your journey. Everything,
okay.
You know, went there to Dunbar, and just tell us the whole nine yards.
Yeah, well, I grew up and playing football for Dunbar, being in that area, went to Terrell Junior High School, was junior high school at the time, and you know, I used to go up and watch Kenneth Green play and guys like you play, man, back in the day, just going to admire you guys from afar. And didn't realize how close I was to the game. But I played at Dunbar for 3 years and started, you know, after my second game, started playing for Dunbar as a cornerback. Got moved around a little bit, played a little running back, a little receiver. Didn't come off the field like we did back in the day, you know, all the special teams.
Yeah.
And play, you know, for Luther Banner, man, who was a great coach at Dunbar. But he, you know, just couldn't win a championship. They competed a lot, but you know, just couldn't get that win. And you know, playing up in that league at that time, man, it was tough. It was very competitive, and I learned a lot. You know, just playing against people, competing against people. And like you said, how do I know, you know, Theophilus Brooks? You know, we knew everybody. You knew all the ball players, man. The ball players knew the ball players, man, whether they were before you or playing with you or after you, because, you know, we were students of the game, and you know, D.C. athletics, you know, was important. But
That's right.
After making all inner highs at D-back, and it was all inner high at that time before it was a DCIAA, you know, I got a chance to go to a couple of schools, but I ended up making my mark at Cheney. And,
Did you play with Dirty Waters? Actually, I didn't play with him, but I coached him
for like a semester. I was a grad assistant coach at Cheney.
Oh, okay.
And Andre was a freshman. So that's how my coaching career, you know, kind of got started there. But I had a chance to go out to California and play football. It was semi-pro football, actually. And they were affiliated with the Raiders and the Rams, a team called the Napa Valley Bears.
Yeah. Back then, for the NFL,
You know, semi-pro football was like a stepping stone for guys to go to the league. So, you know, the league out there was very competitive, and a lot of our guys that played all went to the league, especially the USFL. I wasn't fortunate enough to go. I had some trials, but, you know, I stayed 2 years out there, came back into the city, and, you know, I had my degree from Cheney, and I started subbing and eventually got a job in the D.C. public school system, and, you know, got a chance to coach with my old coach, Luther Banner.
Yeah.
That kind of started all off for me in terms of coaching. Spent some time with him, with John Nunn. Was his defensive coordinator, assistant head coach. And when, you know, Nunn left the system, I got a chance to take over at Dunbar. You know, kind of the rest was history, man. It was very competitive, though. You know, we started, I had to find a way to make a name for myself. And, you know, I just think that, you know, some of the things that Nunn put in place and just some of the work ethic and my competitiveness, you know, teams kind of bought in what we were trying to do, and we had a lot of success there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you won a lot of championships. Like every year, Dunbar was going to be in the championship. And you build a program. A lot of people, you know, they build a football team, but you build a program. And you had a lot of pros that come through there. I remember the year we played y'all. I was coaching Whitson 1 year. We played y'all. We beat y'all that game, but Dunbar had been beating Whitson so much. That was the year, I forgot what year it was. We had Roland Mata and y'all had Vernon Davis and all that. And, and we thought we really won the Super Bowl because I think that's the first time Fuller beat you because you had been dominating and you won some more after that. And you had all
I'm the first time I'm going to admit it. You know, people know we had the summer job program, and some other people had that program too. But, worked. We had the kids, you know, literally working out during the summer, you know, not playing football, just lifting and conditioning and running because I thought that was important, and teaching them about nutrition and hydration and taking care of their body and all of those type of things. And that's how, you know, we develop our players. I mean, I learned from Sam Teller. You know, he used to always get players. I said, man, where you get these players from? He said, man, we make them. And I was like, how do you make them? And, you know, the weight room and working out. But this is the thing that I've never mentioned to anybody. I'm telling you, the first person, I think it was a secret, but people kind of figured it out. I'm telling you on your show, this is the first time I've ever mentioned that. But when those guys worked in the summer, and there were other summer job programs, we went to camp. We went to camp less. You know, we went for like, it was an Edgewater, Maryland, the YMCA camp. And we would go for 4 days and 3 nights. But what we did at camp, you know, we really worked. So we got like 4 practices in Brooks. That's when, you know, nobody really was counting the practices. Nobody was keeping up with it. So when we came back from camp, we had 16 practices when everybody else had 4 practices. Because, you know, we had 4 days. And if you was lucky to do 2 a day, you was lucky. Because once those kids went home, they wouldn't come back, you know. So you couldn't really do 2 a days like they were doing the county and stuff like that. So like anybody else, that's why Florida football and Texas football, and I had a chance to coach college football and seeing it in Texas and those places. The only difference they have on our kids is that they get 25 more practices than we do a year. That's it. We're pads. If you gave us the DCIAA, the schools in this area, 25 practices was pad during the summer, man, we would be great. We would be awesome. We would put out more players. And that was just our key, man. We had – by the time you had 4 practices, we had 16 practices. And it wasn't illegal because we were at camp, but it wasn't all pass. We had a conditioning practice in the morning, special team practice after breakfast. Then we might go pass, helmets and shoulder pads. Then we have like a walkthrough in the evening. Yeah. Then we have practice with full gear. So we kept the, and then we had meetings and film and all that stuff. We were doing that back then. And,
absolutely.
And when we came back from camp, you know, we were ready. So by the time you caught up with us, you know, it was kind of late. We just had to jump. But eventually everybody did. Everybody did, and then, you know, there were some good coaches in the league, and they started emulating what we were doing and working hard, too, you know. So that's pretty much how we got our program off and running and started. And from there, you know, kids became attracted to the program. We were able to bring in some good kids.
Winning,
you know, and start winning and move from there. So that's pretty much the secret to our success. You know, I say we outworked people and we worked hard. That's what we did.
No question.
But you can't do that now, you know.
Yeah, I remember Bob Hinton, he had a brick camp. He was similar doing that. And now more and more coaches, you know, they got this summer jobs, and the kids are working out. But you know what? That is great right there because, you know, it's about teaching technique, schemes and stuff like that. Everybody wants to get into just run some plays and hit each other. But your teams were technically sound. That's the key. You can go out of town to win games. They were in shape and technically sound. Because you know what? I've said this all the time. You cannot run one offensive play. If I run an offensive play, I want to make sure everybody's technique is down on point before we run the play. Linemen stand low, running backs, quarterback, the right steps, you know, three-step, five-step, you know, footwork and all that.
Right.
It's not all about just running a bunch of plays. Right, Coach?
And that's what we did. We took all our pads and seals and sleds down there. But I want to allude to this too, man. We had a great – and they don't get a lot of credit, but not just my assistant coaches, you know, Heddens and Stewart. Those assistant guys don't get a lot of credit, man. And those guys were the guys that really were good teachers, man. And I didn't do it by myself. I can't stay here and say, I know more football. I had a great coaching staff, and those guys put in the work. All those guys took off working with the camp. All those guys put in things. And like you said, Bob had you and some other guys on that staff, man. You know, those were the guys, the grunts, that really made a difference in terms of, you know, pulling guys
like
to the side and meeting them, man. And assistant coaches don't get enough credit.
Yeah, Cops, Bobby. Sammy,
Cops
play for me. Cops bad boy.
Yeah.
I mean, it means a lot. Your coaches stand together. You still got a lot of them on Oxon Hill with you.
Exactly. We were tight, and I always felt that I treated my coaches right, gave them enough leeway, let them know what I wanted to do, and if they knew what we were all on the same page in terms of thinking. I know it's for Spivey and Cox and Willie Bennett. All those guys are thinking. They think we're on the same page. They know what I want to get done. We talk about it. You know, you go in the room, you know, you're going to have some disagreements. But, you know, when we come out, you know, we're on the same page. And we don't let that stuff fester on and linger on. And that's been the key to our success. And, you know, that's kind of what helped Fleming out. All the coaches that won championships, for the most part, had a great staff, man. And, like I said, assistant coaches in the city, you know, they don't get the credit and the due credit that's deserved. But, you know, I take my hat off to those guys, man, because, you know, when I couldn't reach the kid or when they would tell me, hey, coach, you know, this give this guy a chance. So I've been working with him on this. And, you know, if you trust your coaches and they y'all on the same page, you know, it'd be like,
that's right.
It that's works.
Right. When I coached up Friendship, I coached up Friendship for 2 years, and they had a lot of coaches. But one thing I noticed about them, we never got into big arguments. We never trashed each other, and we didn't get along. I mean, we didn't go along with some of the things we talked about. We didn't meet, but nobody trashed anybody or called anybody names or got jealous. I want more responsibility. I want more this and that. And the thing about it is, if you get people, some coaches, and you know what? Everybody can't be a coach. I keep telling everybody in this city about coaches, every job you get, you got to go to orientation or some type of training. In D.C., a lot of places, all you got to do is get a background check and a urine check and get a hat, and you're a coach.
Yeah.
But everybody can coach.
And the other thing is that even if you do make it through that, it's a role that you can play. I had some coaches, I'm not going to name them, but they were my goon coaches, man. They, you know, hey, they go down, serve some quarter up 5th and 0 and make them guys come to practice, man, and they kept them in line, you know. that was their role. I mean, I didn't need them to call the plays and stuff. I need you to keep the big hand on the kids, you know, keep them in line. I had guys like that. I had guys that would hug them up, and, you know, say, man, you know, coach love you, man. You know, so but if you stay in your role and do that, now you're not a – you know, you're still important because, you know, you're going to get those guys. Those guys can relate to you. You know, you're closer to their age, you know, those things like that. That's your role. But don't get out your lane, man, and say, hey, you know, I'm so important that, man, let me call this double reverse pass play. That ain't you, man. You know, right. You can get to that point. You can get to that point. But come in, do your role. There's some great coaches, man, that just do great fundamental work, great hand placement work. Those things were important. You know, for me. Then there's some coaches that, you know, can scheme up and call plays. You know, and if you can kind of work together as a team, you do your role and stay in your lane, you know, and that's what Eden had a good grasp on his coaches and Willie and, you know, Fleming for that matter. You know, Mo, you know, those guys, they knew what they wanted and they had guys, you know, like Bunny and those guys, you know, They did their role, man, and those guys were successful because, you know, they stayed in the lane. And, you know, we got all these coaches now, you know, like you said, just put on the hat, and they look at PlayStation and Madden, and they know everything. But it's more than that, man.
And go to clinics. You know, I went to many clinics. You know, I try to encourage boys club coaches, youth coaches, to go to clinics. You know, you say you went somewhere and you won a Super Bowl, but they don't realize if you got two or three great athletes on that team, you can win a lot of games, but you need to better yourself and go to clinics. You know, everybody need to go to kind of coaching clinics. And, I mean, it helps you. It helps you. But let me ask you a question.
Yep.
Talk about some of the pros that you got, because you got when you send people to the pros, they're all-stars. Hey, Bob, he sent people to the pros. They just not in the pros. They become all-stars.
Oh, man. They
and
pros.
Let me tell you this, man. Per capita, D.C. has the most NFL players out there. So they were there. But I think, like I said, because we had a training regimen like college had. And I went to clinics, too. But I went straight to the schools and found out, you know, not just the clinic talk, but what they really did. You know, they're going to give you the clinic talk with everybody in there. But what y'all really doing, man? You know, the X's and O's with that. But our kids, one thing, they were able to play as freshmen because they were in shape, man, like Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis was strong and Dunbar because we lift weights. And, you know, he went to the NFL Combine and set a record for tight ends for lifting. You know, I encourage my kids to play two sports, run track, play baseball, you know, and do all the working out. But Vernon and Vontae and Aurelius Ben and Josh Cribbs, all those guys, you know, they were just so competitive through our workouts, man. When they got to college, it was easy. So, you know, when you get a chance to get on the field, early, you know, then, you know, it kind of translates to you getting a better look early. So, you know, and I don't like to shoot down the private schools, the Catholic schools, but you go sit on the bench for 2 or 3 years and you know, you don't get that on-field experience that you should get. You know, it kind of hurts you a little bit, man. You know, I mean, you become a good player and everything, but my kids, they played as ninth grade. Aurelius Ben played as a freshman. And, you know, he got a chance to make an impact right away. No, he came in as a quarterback, but then he was a wide receiver. And, you know, he was a U.S. Army All-American and went to Illinois and was drafted. He recently played for the Jaguars and the Eagles.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a great player for us, man. Same thing with Josh Cribbs, you know.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. What you think about that running back from Bell, that little guy?
You know,
the running back from Bell?
Yeah, well, I've seen him when he was young, and I didn't see him play much, you know, his last 2 years. And, you know, I heard he's a pretty good player, man. But, you know, just as a Division I coach, you know, he can play somewhere. I would just put it to you that way. I don't know if he's a Division I player because of his size. Because, you know, you got to block defensive ends like Clowney. You know, you got to be able to pick up in protection. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a great high school player, but, you know, when you go to the next level, it all depends on what you can do there. So, he's a great high school level player for his league and for his division. But, you know, when you're coaching on college, man, you're coaching for my family. You know, that's how I feed my family. This is how I pay my bills. This is how I pay my house note. And am I going to pick you to block that 6'5", 250-pound defensive end so I can eat? Or I'm, you know, I'm just saying what it is, man. Or I'm going to get a guy that's you know, 5'10", 5'11", 6 feet, 200 pounds that can help me out in protection, plus get those tough yards inside. It's no joke in D1 football, man, just like high school football, man, you know. You know, if you're playing against guys that can go to the next level, that can knock you out. You know, you're talking about concussions and all that stuff. You know, you're talking serious stuff, and you know, your heart go out for a kid like that because he puts it all on the line. He really works hard, but now you're talking about, you know, your job on the line. You know, this is how you eat. I mean, for real, this is how you feed your family. So
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. And you know what?
So you know,
he the big boys, and he don't hit them. He can't say my bad.
Right, and they're not taking nothing for what he's done up to this point, you know, on his high school career. You know, they're great. They're great high school players, and that somewhere along the line, we all gonna have to meet the end of the road. And I'm not saying that he can't play anywhere. There's somewhere he can play. But you know, but it's to the point where you know you put your job on the line, you know. You know, people
That's
don't
right.
think like that. You know, I got to pay my house note based on what this kid gonna do against this. You know,
right.
and this my protection scheme against this. You know,
this
big 6'5" defensive end.
I'm glad you said that. Even when I coached the Bulls, when I took over, they won only 4 games in 2 years. The first thing I did is I cut 30 ball players, but I wanted guys to play college. Guys have been in the pros. I had a few high school ball players, but I wanted to upgrade. And people said, oh man, you don't want nobody if they didn't play college ball. I'm trying to upgrade the program. A lot of people don't understand. It's not about the same semi-pro, your buddy here, and you get this person. I love Rockenberry, but I let Rockenberry go because I need a Sam Taylor. Because Rockenberry, I want you in shape, you know. I want you 240 pounds, you know. So I got rid of a lot of people because, you know what? Soon as I lose, you know. My reputation on the line, so I understand. It's about accountability, and you know,
you can't take nothing from those kids. Though I mean, they were good at where they are and what they did, but to go to the next level, you know, and like you said, to be good and to compete, man, that's you know, it is what it is, you know. So like I said, my hat's off to him because I know he racked up a lot of yards and. Was very productive for his team, and they got to the Gravy Bowl, and you know things didn't work out for him. But you know, in the real world, you know, you don't get the job done, you can't get the job done. You know, you out of luck.
Maybe go to Division 3. You know, maybe Division 3 or something.
Right.
You know,
what would you?
Yeah, Division 2. Trust me, there is somewhere he can play. You know, it's somewhere you all can play. But you know, and I'm not gonna be the first. I'm not gonna be the person gonna shoot down a kid's dream. Say hey, you can't make it in the NFL because you know I've seen guys go to the NFL. But you know, I also coach Division 1 football. You know, and a part of that being in that room when we're recruiting and we standing on the table for a kid. You know, we all go out and have certain areas. And if I have this area and I come back, I say, hey man, you know. This dude went to California and got the best 5 backs. This dude went to Texas and got the best 5 backs. This dude go to Florida and get the best 5 backs. And I come in here and he's one of my best 5 backs. You know, we put him on the board, and who does he match up with in catching, blocking, you know, height and weight automatically get you some points. And, you know, it's just the reality of it, man. There is being a playmaker. And being special, you know, if he's running a 4.40 or 4.140, something phenomenal, then, you know, they get him some more brownie points and we have a little more conversation about how he can help us out as a kick returner and maybe a slot receiver, you know, if he's that fast. But, you know, they're going to look at me, man, in that room like, you know, hey, you know, you crazy, man. You know, you can't put it all on the line. For that, but you know, my hat's off to him. He's a gutsy little player, and you know, he did. He took his team a long way, but again, there's some way he could play. But you know,
going
to the next level,
you know,
man, he's gonna have to find a special spot for him.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that about when you recruit. You know what? You know, a lot of people, when I had that team, you know, you got a lot of receivers that can go deep. They're athletic. They can do a lot of things. But I try to stress, if you got a receiver that can run every route on the tree, perfection, and catch the ball, you got somebody special. Like Larry Fitzgerald, they got him in the slot. Now, he can do it all. Edelman and Amendola. See, a lot of people don't realize these people are route runners. Route runners will kill you when they can do the whole tree, you know? Routes are important. A lot of people think it's just running, you know.
But, like, a lot of kids put their all these highlights together, you know. One thing, especially as receivers, and that's what I coached, you know, on the Division I level, they, you know, one thing that I'm looking at their tape, they need to have some blocking on their tape, you know. They need to have them, you know, running all those different routes on the tree and getting in and out of their breaks and hustling, you know, giving up 100%.
Right.
But, you know, but the whole phase, all the phases of the game in terms of blocking, running your routes precise, being tough, you know, all those things, you know, make a difference. So, you know, when you're putting together your highlight tape, you know, make sure you include those things on there. And it's not,
right.
You know, you running deep routes and catching bombs. You know, that's good, but, you know,
yeah.
You better be able to explode out your break, get some separation, you know,
yeah.
Catch the ball fundamentally, tuck it, and get plant and get vertical upfield.
Right, Coach. Absolutely.
Nothing like it.
Yep. There's a lot of talent in the city, man, in the DMV, and you know, particularly DC and you know PG County. You know, I don't think Prince George's County get its credit for you know what they produce as well. You know, it's really Ward 8. You know, Southeast Extended. Those guys across the line from Ballou and Woodson and you know all those kids all across, you know. Back and forth across the line, you know, they're real close and they compete against each other in boys club football, and it's very competitive, man. And I would put DC football up with any inner city football, maybe with the exception of maybe California or Florida. But if you take the same any size football team, you know, like say HD, you know, Ballou, Wilson, any school that is size in an inner city. They compete with those schools. You know, we always get matched up against private schools or schools out in the county that have three times the amount of male students that we have. You know, that's hard to match up with. But you know, this area of football, man, is really good and it's getting better. The only thing, like I said, I wish and I you know, call me out on it if you want to, man. But kids. Would you know? Give the public schools a chance to
absolutely, to
get coached up and play because you know a lot of kids in the city and in the public schools, man, are great players and they can play, but you know they tend to go to private schools and different schools and to stockpile those kids, man, and you know it's killing those programs, you know, and nothing against the Mathers and St. John's and those schools, but. The public school teams can prepare you, you know, academically and athletically as well.
Well, what about you turn Austin Hill around, man? Because Austin Hill was bad shape.
We're still not there yet. But it's coming. I think we get a little more respect than we've been getting in the past year.
Wow.
And I think that after the next couple of years, we should be pretty competitive. But like you said, man, you win with Jimmys and Joes. You don't win with X's and O's, and people don't realize that. And, you know, it take a while to build them guys up. So we build them up in the weight room. You know, we're doing a lot of 7-on-7 camps. And you know, whatever we can do on the off season, we're doing, you know, agility ladders and things like that. And, you know, I like where we are as a program now. And I think, you know, we'll be even more competitive the next couple of years.
Every time I see you, I always say, man, hey, you turn around. I talk about you all the time, man. I like people programs. Just like when Mo was winning the Blue, man, I like to see programs. You know, you got a lot of people, they hate us and they jealous and all that. Anytime you see a coach that excels in this town or do good, he's doing good, hey, man, hey, I take my hat off to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mo
has done a tremendous job, man.
What makes a difference? You know,
yep.
Do a great job.
And that's what it's about, Brooks, man. Iron sharpening iron, man. you know, the league gets better when other teams get better, when you got to compete against other teams, you know. I hate to keep jumping on WCAC, but that's why people say they're a good league, because it's a lot of good teams in there. But they're top heavy up the front. It's four or five good teams in there. But when you got, you know, more competitive teams like, you know, Prince George's County League, man, I mean, our schedule was Eleanor Roosevelt, Duval. We had Flowers, where Cato June is, man. We had Bowie, who made a run at the playoff. We had Suitland, who's always had a lot of great Division I players. I mean, every week, man, you know, you had to show up and you had to play, you know. And there's some other teams like Lago and Douglas that had some good seasons, and Grand Parks. You know, that's why I decided to go out there, you know, coming back, because, you know, it's going to be a competitive league, and week in and week out, you know, you got to strap it up and go at it. And, you know, at this stage of my career, you know, I wanted that challenge, and I think things are looking up for Oxon Hill and Oxon Hill Clippers.
Yeah, Danny Henry's on last week from Wynn Park. So, you know, he had a journey. He took his kids to, he'd take them to church or whatever. You know, the media here don't give the inner city play. It's always Maryland and Virginia, well, mostly Virginia. But it's a lot of great stories. You know, Cornelius Green told me about how he went up there and the Klan threatened his life up Ohio State, and they threw batteries at him and did all kind of stuff. You know, people don't realize, just like you, you know, the way you have raised that program, Dunbar, from dirt, it should be a story. It should be a movie about that. You helped a lot of people. You know, that area, a lot of them guys been dead.
Yep. You know, and I was fortunate. I didn't have anybody die that played on my team actively. But after, you know, a lot of them passed away or got caught up after they left, you know. And, you know, I know Stu dealt with some of those guys, and some of the guys over Baloo dealt with them. And I'm fortunate I didn't have to deal with that, man. But it's a reality, man, with those kids. And that's why, you know, people always ask me to compare the two leagues. You know, the kids in D.C., you know, like I know, man, it's a different kid, man, you know. And, they're really hungry. They really, you know, need that attention, need that love that they get from coaches and they get from being a part of an organization and a team. And those kids will run through a wall for you, man. You know, those kids will give you, you know, 110%. And, you know, and then they do it for each other, too, man. And it's nothing like being a part of a team, man, something special where, you know, the rest of your life, man, you know, you got guys with, you know, you're friends with all your teammates that you, with the school, with the Cardoza and wherever you went to school, man. You know, my best friends and the teammates that I played with. So, you know, it's that drive like that, man.
You know, Bob Hayden, I played for Bob Hayden. I'm the only child. I had a mother and father. I had a decent mother and father. The only men that I ever been afraid of in my life was my father, Bob Hayden. Bob Hayden scared me to death, but he wasn't nasty and disrespectful. I played for him at Cadoza, but he was just 230 pounds, big black dude, and I looked at him and I was horrified. I was scared to death of him, right? And to this day, I don't even call him Bob like some people. Well, Coach, I call him Mr. Head.
The same way with Luther Banner, man. Same way. You know, he was the same type of guy, man. It wasn't being scared. It was just that respect factor that you had, man, because this guy had that much power to control. I mean, Head had power. He got 80 people on the team at Cadoza. I mean, at Woodson at Cadoza, they had a nice amount of team. But for somebody to be able to control that many, you know, black guys that everybody's afraid of, and they're just, you can just say, hey, line up, and you get them to line up. Hey, hit the ground. Right. They hit the ground. They do. You have that much power and control. You know, that's respect, man. And, you know, fear and respect kind of go hand in hand. But, you know, because we have so much respect for our coaches, man, you know, they mean a lot to us because they're important in our life, man. You know, they talk to us about things that you can't really talk to about your dad. They get you out of trouble if you're in trouble, but they still punish you, you know, for doing something wrong, you know.
Right.
You know, you can depend on them, and they're there for you, and they're going to give you some advice. And it's like running a corporation, you know. Hey, he's the CEO. He's the leader. And, you know, he's telling people what to do. You got this responsibility. You got this responsibility.
Right.
You know, we're a corporation. We don't run unless you do your job. You do your job. You do your job. And you don't want to let him down because you respect him and your teammates.
Right.
And, you know, kids learn a lot from that, man.
Absolutely.
So, like,
well, Craig, glad,
yep.
Glad you're on our show, man. We got to go. We got to pay some bills. We got another
okay.
guest. But I'm telling you, we're going to have you back.
Anytime, Brooks, you know that, man. Anytime, man. Appreciate you having me on, man. Appreciate what you guys are doing. And, you know, it's a great thing, man, to keeping, you know, DMV, DC football alive and everything that's going on, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Love you, man. Good job.
Hey, Brooks.
Good job.
Brooks, go Redskins, man. The Patriots, okay. Go Redskins. We see the Patriots in the championship.
Hey, go Patriots.
Okay, all right, buddy. Man. Later, man. Later.
Love you, man.
Okay.
Talk to you.
And we're going to bring your man right here, right on into the mix, man. We're going to keep this thing going. We got the Redskins down by 7. We got Mr. J.D. Brown on the line with us today. Man, welcome to the show, Mr. Brown.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
J.D., my man.
Hey,
J.D.
What's up,
J.D., look here, man. Don't call me. He's going to call me Cheap Shot.
I'm not going to tell a nickname I gave you about 30 years ago.
Everybody already know. It's all over D.C.
What's his name?
How you doing?
Look,
what's up?
Let me tell you. We got J.D. Brown here.
J.D. Brown.
Been knowing him for a long time. Bad dude. Played baseball. Baseball to Howard, played football, played with the Stonewalls, played with Brothers AC. He went to Stonewall 1 year, he led the league at interceptions. They had like 10 playing safety.
Wow.
And recreation, my second time in recreation, he's the one that got me a job. He was the ward manager, Ward 7.
Wow.
And if you don't like JD, there's something wrong. You know, he's been in boxing. You know, he moved to California with Sugar Ray Leonard. They're real close. He's Asian. He promotes. Boxing, he got race horses.
Oh,
everything.
Wow.
He coached Fort Davis Jets, and they won championship.
Wow.
Back in the day.
An example.
Everything he touches, gold.
What's up,
baby?
Welcome to the show. Let's talk football.
Thank you for those accolades, Mr. Brooks, and I'm glad to be on the show. Let's talk football.
Yeah. So, JD, let me ask you a question. You know the Fort
That's
Davis
right.
Jets, remember? You remember when you coached them? Man, some of them kids went to Kellen Miller, and they talk about you all the time. They still talk about you.
That was a great experience working with those young people out there in Southeast Washington on 41st and Alabama Avenue. We're the home of the Fort Davis Jets, and I had kids that came from over with Kellen Miller. I had kids came from Benning Terrace. Kids came from Benning Park. Kids would walk up there from East Capitol Street. Just to be a part of the team that we had, and we had some great teams up there, and these young men went on and did great things in high school and college.
Yeah. And my man, Leslie Taylor, he played with you. A lot of them played with you. But, J.D., talk about your journey. I know you played Ball Brothers and Stonewalls and, you know, did with boxing. Just your journey.
Well, my journey started back at Spingarn High School when I was in high school. I played for Spingarn. I played baseball and football at Spingarn. Graduated from Spingarn High School. I went on to Howard University, and I played football and baseball at Howard University. I had a great career up there. I had a great opportunity to meet a lot of great people. I left Howard University. I started playing baseball again with the Washington Black Sox. And that experience led me to meet Rock Newman and Glenn Harris. They were on the same team with me back then.
Yeah.
Jenks Morton, Coach Sugar Ray Leonard, he was on the team with us. We had a
Sugar
great
Ray
team.
Leonard
was one of the best.
Call?
No,
you
no, I said Jenks Morton. Jenks Morton.
Oh, Jenks.
No, Jenks Morton.
Okay.
Yeah, Jenks Morton played with us. And then after playing with the Black Sox, I went and played with the Stonewalls. Well, I started playing with Brothers AC first. Weasel Jackson, who was my neighbor, got me involved to play with the Brothers AC. And I played with Brothers AC, touch football in the league, and then I went on to play with the Stonewalls. I played with Stonewalls. I made all conference my first year playing in the league. And back in those days, man, that was real big in Washington, D.C., playing in that Banneker League. You know, you had the Timberwolves, you had the D.C. Bears, you had the Cavaliers, you had the Saints, the Baltimore Rams. And we had a lot of good football players who probably could have made it to the NFL, but for whatever reason, they didn't get a chance or opportunity.
You're right. Hey, let me tell you something. You talking about like Rob Lee Stewart, Lou Johnson. Hey, when you play, you know, I played on the road a lot, but when you come to play down Banneker, you better come to play.
Hey.
Because I'm telling you, there's a lot of talent. You know, one night I looked up, and Willie Stewart was playing center for the Cavaliers. He came over from college.
I ain't playing.
You know,
yeah.
You know, but look, when you were playing, you know, I try to tell my man Pop, brother won so many championships, make your head hurt.
Oh, man.
Hey, look, I played with brothers for 2 years, but JD played forever. JD, in about a 10-year span, how many games did brothers lose? Just off the top.
In 10 years, we probably lost. We didn't lose 10 games in 10 years. You know, we won just about every league that we played in. We played on a weekday league. We played on a Saturday league. We played on a Sunday. Sometimes we'd have two games scheduled at the same time. We'd send the first team to play one game, and the second string team would play the other game. So we had two games going on at the same time.
That's true. Because when I was playing with brothers, they had a game in PG County, and they had one at Anacostia Park, and I had to go to Anacostia Park to play. So they
split
and win, too.
Hey, that's amazing right there. That's amazing.
Yeah. With Roger Scott and that bunch. I mean, it's a bad bunch.
I'm talking about that.
I played against Frank Princeton, and I hated his guts. And he wound up being the best man the second time I got married.
Hey, turned into love, huh?
Yeah. Thank God I'll be married again.
That's the reason that they called the brothers, because everybody became brothers on the team. We had a lot of guys who came from other teams who came to the brothers, and once they came to the brothers, that's what we had. They got brotherly love. Everybody became part of the brothers.
You're right, because Roger Scott and I, we became real close, right? When I went to the brothers, right? And his son played for me, Lydell. And Weasel and all them, and you see them, hey, man, I miss a lot of them guys, you know. And Nate Henry, we used to battle. Nate Henry was one of my best friends.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get thrown out of the game together.
Yeah. and when Cheap Shot used to play with the D.C. Bears, he used to hurt people out there. And I'm glad I was on defense. The only time he got a shot to try to hit me was when I was running back kickoffs and punts. He get a shot at me then, but other than that, I always look for the hangman. He would hang you if you come across that middle.
Hey,
you weren't playing.
I was protecting myself.
Oh, man.
Hey, JD, you're talking about the boxing. Got in the box.
Well, I got into the boxing situation. I was working when I left Howard, Reggie and Howard. I started working in the D.C. Department of Recreation, and I was working out in the South. Well, I worked in the Northeast first. I worked at Kelly Miller. I worked at Kelly Miller, and then I left Kelly Miller. I went to Fairfax Village, which became Fort Davis Recreation Center, and I started a boxing program there. Back in the early '70s, and at the same time. Of course, in Palmer Park, they had Sugar Ray Leonard coming along, and Derek Holmes, they were coming along, and Claude Boger and Kenny Chevalier, and all those guys were coming out of Palmer. And I started a team in D.C., so I figured I better get some recruits. So I went down to Kelly Miller and went up in Lincoln Heights. I went up in Lincoln Heights and got a kid by the name of Roger Davis. They call him Roger the Dodger. I got a kid named Andre Gant, whose brother was Johnny Gant. And Johnny Gant became one of my best friends, and we would talk boxing all the time, and when Johnny was a professional boxer at the end of his career, I helped him out and was kind of a consultant for him and helped put together some fights for him, and you know I liked it. And Sugar Ray Leonard was coming along. He always used to emulate us. He would look up to me and Johnny. We were a little older than he was, and he looked up to us. And in fact, I introduced Johnny to Sugar Ray Leonard when Ray was an amateur. And when Ray turned professional, he asked me to come to work with him, and I went to work with him, and I started out with him working I was matchmaker for him. I put together all of his sparring partners for him. I put together the undercard for all those major fights that he had.
What?
And then after that, I became business partners with him when he started the Sugar Ray Leonard Boxing. We started our own promotion and management company, and I was vice president of Sugar Ray Leonard Boxing. And we had fighters. We had a regular monthly show every month on ESPN. And then Ray got an opportunity to do a show called the Contenders, which was on NBC. And so part of the contract agreement, he had to release all the fighters that he had. And he released all those fighters. And but I'm still working with Ray now. Even now, he travels around the country. He does motivational speeches. And I work as a business manager with him for that. I had the opportunity when Rock Newman got started with Riddick Bowe. We were in the Olympic trials, and Rock was working for Butch Lewis at the time. And Butch Lewis sent Rock out to recruit some fighters. And I was out there recruiting the fighters. I was recruiting Roy Jones and Andrew Maynard, trying to get them to sign Sugar Leonard Boxing. And I told Rock about Riddick Bowe. Rock went and signed Riddick Bowe. Butch Lewis didn't want to sign him. Rock signed him himself, and the rest is history. What he did, I became the matchmaker for Rock Newman and Riddick Bowe for all of his big fights.
And, wow.
Boxing has taken me on a long journey. I was a manager for William Joppy, 3-time world champion. I was manager at one time for DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley. So I've had a great experience in the boxing world as well.
I know. You know what? Let me tell you. You know my man D. Lattimore, Lincoln Heights.
Oh, yeah.
Darrell Lattimore.
Darrell Lattimore. He used to live in Lincoln Heights.
Yeah. He used to box, I think, you know, they say he had the wrong people handling him. I don't know. But he was one of my students, too. And I forgot my man's name. He was one of my students. I forgot his name. But he got killed, right? And he was a heavyweight. He got killed up there hustling uptown, right? So it's a lot of guys.
His name Jerry
Ballard.
Jerry Ballard.
He played basketball for Kevin Miller, right? He had a little blemish on this. We used to call him Swamp Man, and he got hurt. He was hustling and taking money from people, and they killed him up on Kennedy Street. That was for the funeral.
Right. I mean, he fought on a couple of shows I promoted back in the day.
Well, how good do you think he could have been? How good do you think he could have been?
Swamp Man.
Yeah.
One of the things, if he had the talent and the skills. Sometimes they just don't have the mindset. You know, you got to get them out. You got to get that mindset out of them. That they have. But in terms of boxing, he was an extremely good boxer. He was a strong puncher, and he hurt people.
You know what? When he was at Kevin Miller, before he was boxing, he used to body punch people. You know, he always kept telling me he wanted to fight Mike Tyson. I mean, he was a young boy then. I said, oh, man. And I didn't see him for a long time, right? He went to jail, he came back. I saw him on TV. He was ripped to pieces. And I saw him fight on TV, and I said, there goes Swamp Man. Vicky Wells and I
was
hurt people when he called him Swamp Man.
Yeah, he would hurt people when he hit him. He was a
J.D., talk about racehorses. Horses,
well,
right?
You know, I got into horse business years ago. My father was trained racehorses, and that's how I got into the racehorse business. I've been around them all my life, and my dad he was one of the first black racing officials in the state of Maryland back in the day, and he trained racehorses. And I decided one day just to get a couple of horses just to give him something to do, and I ended up buying a horse. And next thing you know, I had 2 horses, and looked up, I had 15 horses. And they were eating me out of house and home, but I did real good with them. I had one horse that won the Baltimore Breeders' Cup. I had a horse that won the Jennings Handicap. So I had some horses that did real good for me. And then after Joppy fought Jermaine Taylor down in Arkansas, and he lost the title down in Arkansas. I came back. I had a horse out of stable out at Bowie Racetrack. And it was a guy out there, a friend of mine named Eddie Gaudette and Donovan Houghton. They were telling me, man, you ought to get into being an agent for the jockeys, because
you know, it's a lot like the boxing. You know, you do the same thing with the jockeys. And I said, man, I'm not interested in doing that. I said, I'm too busy with this boxing stuff. And the next thing you know, I had a guy, jockey, come up to me about a half hour later and said, Eddie Gaudet told me to come see you, that you're going to be my agent. I said, what? And I thought about it, and you know what? I said, you know what? I'm going to try this because there's not too many African-American agents in the game. And I became one of the few, and I've been doing this for about 10 years, man. I had some real good jockeys that have done some real good work.
Hey, you know, Flash and Duke, Flash ride horses too. Eddie Martin.
Yeah, Flash. I see him a lot of times. Sometimes I ask him, did he park his horse outside? We got his cowboy hat on. I asked him, did he park his horse outside?
I heard he used to do bronco
ride. Yeah, Flash was one of the African American cowboys. A lot of people didn't know that he did a lot of stuff in the black rodeo.
Oh,
yeah, wow! Yeah, no, he was telling me that. Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my friends tell me we need to go horseback riding. I can't fall off no horse. I got a hip replacement. I got a knee replacement. I got six operations. I can't be falling off no horse.
Yeah. With all the replacements, you the bionic man. You ain't going to fall off.
Yes, I will. Hey, J.D., when you play with the Black Sox, y'all won a lot of games in, didn't you?
Yeah, we were one of the best amateur baseball. We were one of the best amateur baseball teams on the East Coast. We would go every year up to Bristol, New Jersey, to play in a major tournament where all the good teams from the East Coast would come, and we won that on many occasions. We had a great team. We had guys who played ball that were minor league ball players who came back home and they ended up playing with the Black Sox. Guys like Robert Woodland, who played with Montreal. He played with Montreal. He played there. We had guys that Roger Scott played with us.
That's my man.
Weasel Jackson. Harold Greer. Butch White played with us. Rocky Butch Newman. Glenn Harris and Staley Jackson, who was a coach at Howard at one time, in Bowie State, football coach at Bowie State. He was playing with us. He played. Him and Glenn Harris were both catchers. Rock Newman, like I said, Rock was still in high school, was playing with us. He played third base, and, you know, believe it or not, Rock could feel that ball down there at third base. Glenn's brother, Ron, he played with us. So we had a lot of good ball players that come to D.C.
All y'all light-skinned, too.
That was in back then, okay?
I know it. Somebody, and you know what? Guess who I was talking to the other day? Roger Lynn.
Who's that?
Roger Lynn.
Oh, Roger the Dodger. Roger the Dodger.
We were working at district government. Every time we go in a meeting, he come in a meeting late. And we all are sitting around a meeting. He come in and say, I know I'm late. Can I punch Brooks in the face?
I'll tell you a funny story about Roger Leonard. Roger Leonard was fighting, and he fought a guy up in D.C. at the Washington Hilton Hotel. And he fought a guy named Herb Willens out of Rockville. And in the dressing room before the fight, Ray came in the dressing room, and Ray told Roger, said, look, don't throw the right hand to the second round, I said, because this guy's a sucker for the right hand. But what you want to do is work your jab, move. So, but don't throw that right hand till the second round, because when you throw the right hand, you're going to nail him and knock him out. Well, of course, Roger, you know, back in the day, Roger wouldn't listen to nobody. He came out the first round and sticking the jab, hitting the guy, bobbing, moving, doing the ollie shuffle and everything. He decided to throw the right hand. He hit the guy with the right hand right near the end of the round. Bam! Knocked the guy down. The guy looked like he was going to be out. The bell saved him. Come out the second round, the guy jumped on Roger, the gorilla in the cage. He was throwing punches on Roger all over the place. So he came back to the corner, and Ray jammed up to the corner and said, Roger, what are you doing? This guy ain't supposed to hit you. Well, Roger said, keep an eye on the referee because somebody hit me in that leg. But he ended up winning the fight. That was back in the day, man. I got some stories I could tell you about Roger the Dodger. Roger was a great fighter. He could have been a world champion if he had the same mental attitude that his brother had. They would have had two world champions out of Palmer Park.
Let me ask you about that. I didn't see the fight, but everybody told me about it. Johnny Gant was Fort Sugar Ray Leonard, and Johnny Gant was up in age a little bit then, right? That fight.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people say Johnny Gant beat Sugar Ray Leonard.
Now, when Johnny fought Ray Leonard, it was the biggest fight to ever come through Washington D.C. in a long time. And you had half the crowd at the it was sold out at the Capitol Center there. Half the crowd was for Johnny Gant, half the crowd was for Ray Leonard, and it was going back and forth. And plus, they had overflow. They had 10,000 people at the D.C. Army to watch it on closed circuit back then. So that was how large of a scale the fight was.
Yeah.
And at the time, Johnny Gant was they thought that Ray was going to be too young and too inexperienced to fight Johnny. And it started off that way. The first four rounds, Johnny Gant was like up. Johnny Gant was popping, moving, doing his thing. And then it started to slow down a little bit. Ray caught up to him, and Ray stopped him. I think it was the seventh or eighth round. Ray stopped him in the fight. And that was what catapulted Ray Leonard's career. After that, Ray just went on to become bigger and better and world champion.
Yeah, wow. Well, imagine with Johnny Gant, do you think he lost because of age? Because I think he was older than Sugar Ray, right?
He was much older than Ray, but the thing about it with Johnny, like I said, Johnny was a great fight. You know, Johnny only had seven amateur fights. He had seven amateur fights and turned professional. Ray had about 100-some amateur fights, and Johnny had the experience. Yeah, Johnny only had seven amateur fights and turned professional. And when he turned professional, Johnny was not really a big puncher. Johnny was they called him a flashy Johnny Gant because he was so smooth in the ring. He boxed guys' ears off. Now, that's what he planned on doing with Ray, but then Ray caught up to him. When Ray hurts you, Ray would get you out of there. I don't care who you were. You could be King Kong. He's going to get you out of there.
I'm going to ask you about one of my students used to be in Anacostia. He boxed it down. I love him. I always loved him when he was in Anacostia. When they were beefing, I used to go in and deal with the crews between Minnesota Avenue and Good Old Road. He had all the respect, but he never got in, and that was Ty Barnett. You know,
Ty Barnett, yeah. Yeah,
buddy.
I know Ty. He's a junior welterweight out of Washington, D.C. Ty's a good fighter. I think he's still fighting. He hasn't had a fight in about 8-9 months, but I think he's still fighting. I think he's still doing it.
Yeah, he's fighting in February. I think he's fighting in February sometime.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. J.E., you my man.
Yes, sir.
Hey, J.E. Hey, J.D., I love you, man.
Yes,
you're
sir.
My man.
Thank you, my brother. I'm glad to have an opportunity. I'm glad to have an opportunity to tell you about the journey that I've had. You know, I've had some guys that I see on the streets now that all become grown men now. They got their own kids, and some got grandkids. And, you know, it's amazing how one thing you can say that might touch a young man's life, whether through boxing, through baseball, through football, through basketball. But, you know, if you have an opportunity to put your hand on the shoulder and talk to a young man, try to help guide him in the right way, you know, it's amazing how they come back to you 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years later and tell you, you know, I love you, man. You did something for me to help me. And I use your success that I've gained by emulating what you did. And, you know, I got young guys now that are coaching teams, and they're all doing the same thing that I did with them. And it feels good to be able to see that.
Yeah, I saw coaches number 6, 1973, and I got a lot
we
of
beat
guys.
We beat y'all. We beat y'all. We beat y'all. Fort Davis, yes, we beat y'all.
The year I had a 95-pound team, we won the championship. I forgot that I won the championship until one of my players told me. I had a guy that played center, right? Rob Davis. He played center for me. And he went on and played 18 years in the NFL. He played as a long snapper. And I didn't realize
that
until one of my players told me. And, you know, it's a lot of guys that's coaching high school ball right now that play for me. Guy with Phelps. It's a lot of them.
You know,
I mean,
you know what, though?
You live long
it's
enough,
funny,
you
it's
help
funny.
People, they turn out great.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I had a kid when I first had the Fort Davis Jets. You know, we played in what was called the Marriott Super Bowl. Back then, it used to come on Channel 5 on TV, and we would play out in Montgomery County. You know, they had two teams from D.C. They had a team from over Monterey's, and they had the Fort Davis Jets. We were only two all-black teams that played in the game. And we had an opportunity to play out there. We played a team from out there, Wheaton Boys Club in the championship. And I had a quarterback, a young kid that was quarterback for me. His name was Arthur Monty Woods. They call him Monty Woods.
And the people at the high schools were out there watching to recruit kids, and they loved him, and he was going to Sousa Junior High School then. They called me, and I hooked up an opportunity for him to end up going to St. Albans. He went to St. Albans. Yeah. He became the quarterback for St. Albans. He was a star player for them. He made all-conference. He left there, and he went out and played for Colorado. He played at Colorado out there, and he was a walk-on. He was a walk-on and became the starting punter for Colorado. And he left there, and he went on and played in USFL with Herschel Walker with the New Jersey Generals. He played with them. And all these years went by, I hadn't seen him in Sugar Ray Leonard. We were training for a fight out in Chandler, Arizona. And we go to Arizona, and I'm out there, and I get a phone call at the hotel, and I said, can I speak to Mr. Brown? I said, speaking. He said, hey, Coach, this is Monty Woods. I couldn't believe it. All those years, he tracked me down because I had an article in the paper where I was working with Sugar Ray Leonard. And he called me, and he brought his family over. I got a chance to introduce him to Ray, and they met the family, got autographed pictures and all of that. But it's amazing that he became, after he retired from football, he became a sheriff in Phoenix, Arizona, and he became a professional bass fisherman. I mean, you know, it's amazing how things in life, you take steps, little steps and big steps, and things go all the way around and evolve. And I had a great opportunity, had a great time, had dinner with him and his family, and it was amazing.
Man, see, all walks of life, you just see people that, you know, a lot of people that I've helped, and they say, I remember you said something to me, and that changed my life. I don't know who the guy is. I got to try to remember who the guy is. You know, you get older, you see a lot of people, and you don't know who they are. Because I had number six, you know, I had John Warren. He went to the Cowboys. Mark McCutcheon went to Green Bay, you know. And when I took over the Bulls, I made sure everybody, I got rid of all the bums and made sure all them guys that came home from college got cut from the pros, even Charles Chisholm. I brought them right with me. Because the owners told me all we want to do is beat the Stonewall. I said, man, I ain't into that. I'm trying to the whole thing, right? So,
yeah, right,
you know,
right.
I knew a lot of guys from H.D. Woodson and Dunbar and different places that went away to school. And you'd be surprised. All the people that we have helped, and most of them turned out great. You know, you got a few that died. But you'd be surprising to a lot of people that a lot of them people became productive citizens. A lot of them.
And on top of that, you also find that the camaraderie that you build with other coaches and stuff, like you and I have been friends for over 40-some years. Glenn Harris and I have been friends for over 40, 50 years. You know, those kinds of things that you build friendships and you build relationships with. And, you know, there ain't nothing I wouldn't do for you or you wouldn't do for me, you know?
You're right. Man, I'm telling you something. We tried to get Glenn on early, but we had a little problem. Glenn, you know, he's sick sometime. He's, you know, with that diabetes. I talked to him.
Right.
He wasn't feeling good. So, but see, that's a guy. If you don't love him, there's something wrong. Because he's been good to everybody.
Glenn is epitome of friendship. He's what the word friendship is all about. When you look up friendship in the dictionary, you find Glenn Harris. Glenn Harris is one of the guys that will be your friend from today, tomorrow, and yesterday.
Yeah, I remember one day we was at a mall together. We was walking, and people stopped and getting autographs. He stopped and talked to people to death. I said, Glenn, man, we supposed to be going. I mean, he didn't just give an autograph or say, oh, how you doing? He stopped talking to anybody. He's just like that. He's a good guy, man.
That's how Glenn was. Glenn's a great guy, man. You know, like I said, if anybody don't like Glenn Harris, something wrong with him.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So what you doing now? I mean, what are you doing now besides, I know you got your horses, what are you doing? You still active in promoting fights or whatever?
Yeah, I still got a couple of fighters that I'm working with. I still work with Sugar Ray Leonard. Ray is traveling all over the country. We just came back from New York last week. You know, he's now the spokesperson for Skechers Tennis Shoes, and we were up there for a big tennis shoe show up there, and they had, Deion Sanders was there representing Under Armour, and Kanye West was there representing Adidas. Ray was there representing Skechers, And it was a great opportunity to meet some of the big wigs that they have in the tennis shoe world. But he's doing that, so we got every month we can travel two or three times a month to different locations where he's doing speeches for major five-star companies that are throughout the United States and the world, really, because we went to South Africa last year. We went to Hawaii. We went to England. We've been all over the place with that, and people just still love Ray, even at this age, just the game. So it's a great opportunity. I'm still involved with the horse race, and I still got a couple of jockeys that I manage out at Law Racetrack. So I go out there and deal with them. And, you know, something to keep me active. You know, when you get old like this, the office, you can't sit around and do nothing. Old age will creep up on you even more, so I try to keep myself busy and active.
I work at L.A. Fitness, and I lift weights all the time. I'm really into weightlifting again. Because let me tell you something, I'll be 67 December 30th, and I don't want to be all drawn up and looking bad. So I stay in the weight room. Because, you know, when you got knee replacement, hip replacement, all that, you got to strip the muscle up around those prostheses. You got to strip the muscles because you don't, having a knee replacement is no good if the muscles are weak. So, you know, I try to lift weights every day. I'm trying to get back in the district government with the rollerators because I got to get back out in the street working with them youngins, right?
Right.
I'm at LA Fitness, right? So, you know, I'm still helping people there. You know, you got a lot of people come in there and they want to learn how to work out. You know, I'm working with them, but always trying to stay positive. And that's one thing I like about you. You're always positive. You're always doing stuff. And, man, it's a pleasure having you on the show.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on with you guys, man. It's been a great time. And, you know, anytime you need me, you know I'm just a phone call away. And anything I can do to help you out, you know the people need you out on the streets because you were definitely a positive role model for young kids. They looked up to you, and, you know, you able to talk that jive, you can walk that walk, and you can talk that talk, and that's what they need.
Oh, yeah.
And I can hit it with a cheap shot.
If they don't pay attention, you definitely hit them with one of the cheap shots.
Hey, you know Drip, Lawrence Wolf, I don't know if you know Drip. Drip said, hit people with a cheap shot and cost is a penny. Hey, I always believe it. If you hurt a man and you send him home with his wife, he'll spend more time at home. Hey, Bob Johnson, that's a sick way of thinking about stuff.
Uh-huh. Hey, but it works.
It definitely works.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for coming on. Love you, man. We're going to have you on again.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Anytime, just give me a call. You guys are doing a great job, and if you need me for anything, just give me a call.
Okay, definitely will. Thanks.
Okay.
We still got one more caller, man. I'm going to pay these bills real quick, but we still got one more caller.
Hold on.
I want to give a big shout-out to Smith Commons. We are right here on 8th Street tonight, broadcasting live from Smith Commons. If you haven't been there, the food is delicious, superb. Man, you got to see this place too, man. It looks good in here. Nice comfy chairs, nice wooden tables. I also want to give a big shout out to ID Life, changing lives around the world, one vitamin at a time. If you don't know anybody who's in ID Life and you want to know somebody in ID Life, get in contact with me through everythingdmv.com. Smith Commons, we are here broadcasting live with the Hangman. We just had Coach Jeffers on. We just had Mr. J.D. Brown on. And it's been just an amazing show tonight. So let's get our caller back on here. Thanks for holding. You now live with the Hangman. Kill the head, the body, and die.
Yeah, hey, this is David Johnson.
Hey, what's up,
man? My man.
What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, man, you know something, man? JD was the first coach to ever cut me from football, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, down Kelly Miller. And I always wanted to prove to him that I was a baller, man. And
why did he cut you?
Huh?
Why did he cut you?
I don't know, man. He must, because I was a red boy,
wait a minute,
I guess.
Wait a minute, Dave. He cut you and you said, I don't know.
Yeah, because I was a red boy, man, you know, coming out of Lincoln Heights, man. Wasn't too many red boys up in Lincoln Heights. And,
Dave, that was funny. You say, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And I always want to ask him, why did he cut me, man? You know, I thought it was because I was a red boy. They thought all red boys were soft.
Bob Head used to tell me that. He said, you never seen red guys as mean? And he said, and I was looking at my skin. I said, am I red? He said, I was looking. I said, man, white-skinned people, you see, all dark-skinned people are mean. And guess what? When I was in high school, I wanted to be dark-skinned.
Yeah. And Mr. Hayden, I played for Bob Head. And Bob Head told me one day, after I bust him up, he said, you the meanest red boy I ever seen. You know, today I want to say something. Today I was watching this program and had Willie Woods on there. I didn't know he was in the condition that he was in.
Yeah,
from playing football. He has his brain injuries from playing football, man. And I didn't know that.
His son played for me. His son played with the Metro Bulls. His son, Willie Wood Jr., he played for me. Great receiver, right? Great leaving ability. You know, his father could jump, too. And I know he's been sick for some time, you know. I called Willie up sometime and asked him how his father was doing. And, you know, he's hanging in there. But one thing about it is I never used my helmet to hit nobody. Back then,
you use that forearm and that shoulder pad.
I know
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to let JD know that, man, I always respected him, and I wanted him to know that I was a very good football player, you know, which he found out later. But he never came to me and never apologized to me, you know. And I always wanted him to, to respect me, you know, and but he never said, Dave, hey, man, you a hell of a ball player.
Yeah, well, guess what? You don't need nobody patting you on the back. You played H.D. Woodson, you played college ball. So, you know what? You did your thing.
Yeah, but, you know, he was the first person to cut me, man. And I was hurt, man. I sit on the pool steps for a whole year watching them dudes practice, man.
Hey, David, are your feelings hurt?
Yeah, man.
David, yeah, man. Hey, crazy, man. David, yeah, my feelings hurt. David, 150 years old, so my feelings hurt.
Oh, man. Still hurt behind that, man. Every time I think about it, when I see JD, man, I should shake my head, man. Say, man, you know, why me, man?
Oh, man.
But you turned out to be great.
Yeah.
Great ball play, man. You
know something? And I hold him responsible for me being great. Because I said, if I ever get a chance to play.
Michael Jordan got cut.
Who?
No. Michael Jordan got cut from the basketball team in junior high and high school.
Yeah,
you
know I know. Yeah.
Okay, well,
hey Brooks, man.
Huh?
Hey, Brooks, how Bob Johnson doing, man? You know, he was like a father to me, man.
I love Bob. He's doing great. Just as crazy as he can be, he's doing great.
You know, Bob raised me, man.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you about that. I used to be the ball boy for the D.C. Bears, so I know all about Brooks.
Oh, man.
I can tell you some things about Brooks you don't want to hear.
Hey, I play by
rules. Hey, look here. When Brooks was coming to the locker room, he smelled like Ben Gay. He'd tape up his knees. Everything was taped up, man, up under that uniform, man. He had to tape himself up before he
got JD back.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And see, I was the ball boy. I saw it all. You know, I knew Marty, Bouye,
hey,
Skip Foster.
Hey, hold up. We got JD on the line. Hold up.
We got JD back, Dave.
Yeah, I called back to tell Dave one of the things that happened. It's been about 50 years ago that happened. And at the time that he got cut, he wasn't serious about football. But guess what? It was a motivational factor that I didn't get a chance to tell him that he was going to go on to be a great football player. And all of that came because he took his anger out because he was mad because he got cut. And he said, I'd never let that happen to me again. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, sir.
Hey, JD, man.
Sometimes you do the little thing that may hurt in the beginning, but they'll make you stronger in the end.
Hey, look here. I didn't try to box.
He did. He gave you respect.
And also, I'm on national radio. I just want to tell him I apologize that I cut a champ.
Oh, man.
Okay, Danny. Thank you, man. I feel better now.
All right, you can go to bed on that, brother. I love you, okay?
Okay, all right, Diddy. All right.
Okay.
Hey, man, I'm glad he called back. Hey, man. If it weren't for your show,
man.
Hey, I would have never got that apology, would I?
Yeah, you got it live. Guess what?
Live.
I got it live, man.
You
I got it live, man.
You got it going on.
That's something else. That's something else.
Yeah, nice talk to you. We're going to pay these bills. We're going to get out of here, Dave. We'll talk to you next
okay.
time.
Okay, hey, Brooks, I'll see you around.
Okay, don't hit me with a cheap shot.
I see you around like a donut.
Hey, man, Brooks.
Huh?
Look, I want to say one thing, and this is it. Whatever happened to Doc's book, man?
Okay, talk to you. Gotta go.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening to this broadcast tonight. We are here, Everything DMV Radio. We are live. Let's Talk Football with the Hangman. About to close this thing on up for us tonight. In the hearts of men forevermore. Hangman Brooks, Buffalo Buggy, he be giving it raw. Yeah, Hangman Brooks, play the game on and off the field. Hangman Brooks, now that's tough football because he's keeping it real with Hangman Brooks. Amen.
Where you going, man? Where you going, man?
I'm going across the street after this.
Where you going? To that left?
To that place.
To get over?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You going with that?
Mm-hmm. Hey, look, you might be in here.
What?
You might be going to get another circle.
You can't even get the thing working, man. You can't get the thing working. What are you get for you? You think you'd be good, too?
No, that's going to be all right.
Yeah. Come on, man. Don't be worried about the door stuff. You get the easy and you talk. That's why people come in, you get on this mic, and you talk to these people. That's all I need to do. I think it is. I'm going to call that dude.
He called him.
Dominate the headlines and the full association with USA Today Sports. Rankings are on the minds of national and local experts. Fans can vote and get involved too. With the Amway Fan Bowl, fans can make their team and their fan base number one. The road to crowning the Amway Coaches Bowl champion has already begun. The coaches are ready. Are you? Get it on the site at amway.com/coachesbowl.
About us not being over there. You want to give me shout outs real quick? It was going okay, though. We was always on here. I always start the show at 7:30, regardless if you're talking or not. The show always starts at 7:30.
10-minute good music.
No, it wasn't 10 minutes. It wasn't. We came on, we talked a little bit, we bopped out.
It's got to work.
Come on. Don't worry about that, Pop Books. Just Yes. So, man,
what an amazing show. What an amazing time. It was great. We did miss my man, Mr. Harris. That's my fault, Glenn Harris. We had some little technical difficulties. But, hey, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Let's Talk Football with Hangman Brooks.
Yes. As my granddaughter told me, she's a big ball of shot caller. She said that last night. I fell out laughing. Big ball shot caller. Ball it. That's my granddaughter, Denaja Ross. Also, I want to say shout out to my daughter, Garnetta, Candy, a.k.a. Candy. She lost her mother.
So sorry.
Tough fight. But she's in a better place than now. And Candy, you know, daddy with you. I got your back.
Right?
And to my man Isaiah Johnson, that's my main man. Ricochet Rabbit.
Uh-huh.
And his brother, Spider-Man. Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about. And as always, my best friend. Glad that you came by. Redskins are winning.
Oh, yeah.
Most of you know.
You know that.
We hope that'll change.
Oh, no, you're on the wrong side of Philly. We're going to have to get him out of D.C.
we want Philly to win.
Nah.
Everybody, we want Philly to win.
Oh, no.
He wants Philly to win,
no,
too.
No, you got that wrong.
Because if he keep talking, I'm going to hit him in the head with a stick.
Nah. So we ain't on the football field right now, Brooks. We ain't on the football field. We wanted to stay just like it is with them Redskins.
I'm going to hit you with my helmet.
Off your head, huh?
No, I don't have my helmet on.
Oh, man. Well, I want to give a shout-out to the lovely lady in my life, my two kids, and, you know, everything that, you know, has happened today to get this thing properly working. Shout-out to Smith Commons. We're right here on 8th Street. Come down, check them out. They have some great food. Great place. It looks really good inside and out. To Adi Life for, you know, changing my life one vitamin at a time. Make sure you go to the website, www.everythingdlee.com. We will have the Let's Talk Football webpage coming up for you very soon. And thanks for everybody who tuned in tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.